Feminist women.
Mulheres feministas.
زنان فمینیست.
بانیو و چیکونزرو چواکادزی.
نساء.
Mulheres feministas.
Young femini. Femactivist.
Nari Mukti.
Matapang na babae. Kechi mai ka ishk.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Women's Magazine. Coming up on today's show,
I instructed him to take, you know, the BART to San Francisco to be safe. Never would have thought that I would receive a phone call that he had been shot.
We'll hear from Wanda Johnson, the mother of Oscar Grant, as we prepare to acknowledge the 5-year anniversary of Grant's death. Stay with us. This is the Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org. I'm Sharon Sabota, and I'm your host and producer for today's show. As many of us are preparing for the holidays and excited about bringing in a new year, this is a difficult time of year for Wanda Johnson. 5 years ago, she got together with her son, his girlfriend, and her granddaughter to celebrate her birthday, which is on New Year's Eve. At the end of the evening, she kissed her son Oscar goodnight and convinced him to take the BART to San Francisco so he could be safe. Hours later, she got the phone call that no mother ever wants to receive. She learned that her son had been shot by BART police officer Johannes Messerli. Her son died, and Johannes Messerli was sentenced to 2 years for involuntary manslaughter. Today, Wanda Johnson will share a piece of her story as she remembers her son, and Oscar's grandmother, Bonnie Johnson, will offer some words of wisdom as they prepare to acknowledge the 5-year anniversary of the murder of Oscar Grant.
Hello, my name is Wanda Johnson. I'm the mother of Oscar Grant, who was murdered in 2009 by a BART police officer, Johannes Messerli.
Thank you so much for being with us today. As many people might know, we're coming up on the 5-year anniversary of the death of your son, Oscar Grant. When we talk about the issue of police brutality, which is often directed at men of color, we don't always take into account how women, and especially how mothers, are affected by this. So today I'm really interested in hearing more of your story. And I'm going to start by asking you the biggest question first. So it's the holiday season, New Year's Eve is approaching, your birthday, and also, unfortunately, the 5-year anniversary of your son's death. So what is this time of the year like for you?
It's an emotional roller coaster, I would say. On the 22nd of December, we got to spend the day celebrating a birthday. And then we came into Christmas, and then my birthday on New Year's Eve, which we got to, Oscar and I and his fiance and daughter, we got to spend together, and we ate gumbo and stuff. And I instructed him to take, you know, the BART to San Francisco to be safe. Never would have thought that I would receive a phone call that he had been shot. And so my mind often goes back and forth, especially at this time, is what I could have did or what I could have said differently to change the results of what happened. But really knowing that there's nothing I could have changed because it happened and it can't be taken back. So it's overwhelming. And then I think about the times we laughed on my birthday as well, some of the funny things that he did. So it's kind of like it's up and down. It's up and down. But through a lot of prayer and through a lot of my family surrounding me, that was what helped me cope.
Bittersweet. You mentioned a birthday on December 22nd?
Yes.
Whose birthday is that one?
That's my daughter's father. So.
Okay. Have you had to go through a process of forgiving yourself? You mentioned, especially since I'm the one who advised him to take the BART, did you have to go through a process to forgive yourself?
I absolutely did, because at first I was blaming myself and I was like, well, maybe I shouldn't have told him to take BART. Maybe I should have just let him ride with his friends and let them drive or he drive. But I had to really realize and really pray. God gave me a peace that, you know, I instructed him to do the right thing, and that was take BART. And it occurred where he was just murdered by the officer, you know, on the platform.
What is it that's gotten you through the last 5 years? You mentioned your faith. You mentioned your family. How is it that you've gotten to the point that you're at today after such a traumatic event?
Through Oscar. Oscar has really helped me as well, because I know what type of person Oscar was. Oscar was a person who loved everybody, and he always was there to help people, and he always loved to help people. And so from his death, He has given me the strength to try to help people, try to educate people, to try to share what happened with him and to other people so that they'll know what happened and that they will, you know, treasure each moment that they have with their family member.
One of the things that I appreciated about Fruitvale Station, the movie, and so many other people, I think, is that it had a very refreshing kind of holistic perspective. It did show some of the rough things that Oscar was dealing with in his life and sort of his process of trying to get life on the right path. But it also showed him as a very warm, loving young man. I would love it for you as his mother to sort of paint us a picture of him as we remember him.
Oscar was a person who loved everybody. And if you were down and you needed to be cheered up, Oscar was that type of person. I remember one story was when he was working at KFC, a gentleman came in, his dog had died. And so he was telling Oscar, and Oscar was like, well, you want me to get you another dog? We can go find you another dog. And Oscar was trying to encourage him. He never met this man before, but yet he still tried to help him. Another story, again, which was in the movie, was the lady with the fish. You know, she didn't know how to cook fish. So Oscar was like, well, let me call my grandma. And so he called, you know, my mom, and she was able to give the young lady the recipe to be able to cook fish. And so it didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter what ethnicity you were. Oscar had the personality to want you to be able to be helped. And he loves to help people. And he wanted you to be able to smile. So if he was ever down or sad, he would try to say an encouraging word to try to make you laugh and to forget about whatever you was going through at that particular time.
And talk about him as a father. He became a father when he was 17 years old, right?
Correct.
Can you talk about his family a little bit?
I can. He really loved his daughter and fiance. They were growing in their relationship, him and his fiance. And he was there for his daughter. He loved her, you know, tried to spoil her as much as he could. They had celebrated Christmas together, you know, before he passed away. And so he was going to take her to Chuck E. Cheese the next day. And that's what he had promised her, to play a game with her and take her to Chuck E. Cheese. But that never occurred. But he was always trying to get the biggest present for her, get all the toys she wanted. He just loved his family. And he wanted to be the best father that he could be for his family and the best husband that he could be to Sophina.
So your son was born on February 27th, 1986.
Correct.
From what I understand, Oscar's dad wasn't in the picture because he was in prison.
Correct.
Okay, so that means you were in the delivery room mm-hmm. by yourself mm-hmm. and probably had to go do a lot of work by yourself as you were.
You know, I did, and then again, I didn't. My mother and father have been married for 56 years now. And my father was a great support, you know, to Oscar. He would take him fishing. He taught him how to really work skills with his hands before my father had a stroke. After Oscar really would help him, he would sort of be like his right hand instead, because my dad did not have the use of his his left hand, because my dad didn't have the use of his left side anymore. So whatever my dad needed, something nailed or whatever, Oscar would be the one who would do it for him. He did some floorboarding, you know, hung some floorboards and different things here for my mom and dad, because, you know, my dad wasn't able to do it. So he did have other, you know, male figures in his life. My dad was very instrumental in Oscar's life until he had a stroke.
So if you can even put yourself back to the time when you were carrying him and kind of preparing for bringing this child into the world and then actually going through the process of doing that, what were sort of the hopes and fears and all those things that you were sort of navigating with at that time?
There was a lot of fears as a African-American young man. You know, the incarceration rate, the drug rate. I mean, there was, you know, the dropout rate. All those were factors that ran through my mind. And so my goal was for Oscar to train him up in the best ability that I could, and to encourage him through his mistakes and to continue to love him no matter what the situation was, and know that it didn't matter what he went through, that he always had an opportunity to be redeemed and always had an opportunity to correct the mistakes. Oftentimes, we have children at times, and our children do things that are not favorable in our sight. And so we want to kind of throw them away, or we don't want to nurture them or encourage them in their mistake that they could do better. And so you have a whole society, you know, of, I want to say, lost men, African-American young men, because a lot of us have threw our children away. And one of the things that I've learned to do is, no matter what my child does, is to learn how to love them unconditionally and remember that there was things in my life that my parents wasn't favorable about, but yet they continued to love me. And so the same with me. As I raised Oscar, he went to Christian schools, but in the end, we make our own decision. And whether they're favorable or unfavorable to us as parents, we still have to encourage our children through those decisions. And so that's where we was with Oscar, is even though he made some unfavorable decisions that I didn't agree with, he still had to live out his life to the fullest, in which he didn't get an opportunity to do that, you know, because he was only 22 years old when he was murdered. So he really didn't have an opportunity to, you know, have that chance to grow out of those mistakes that you make when you're that age. You know, if you look back, a lot of us do crazy things between that age of 18 and even a little bit older than 22. And so Oscar was coming out of that. He was, you know, starting to mature, and his life was taken from him. But in that process, you know, I always believe the report of God that was telling me that Oscar and I would be able to minister together. And even though Oscar was murdered and his death, he's still ministering to the world through the movie and through his life. And so I'm grateful, and I just, you know, have to, you know, continually thank God for that, because it doesn't matter. I just have to go back to it. It doesn't matter how we look at people. If we could remember that we have made mistakes too, and if we could love people through those mistakes, we would see a better nation than what we have today, if we could do that.
I had started that question by asking you to reflect way back to carrying Oscar and preparing to give birth to him. You sort of were thinking about all these things that could affect him, and you already had to think about things like incarceration because it had already kind of touched your life.
Exactly. I had to think about that. I had to think about what was going on in the society at that time that I had him. And, you know, the area in particular where I was living at, all those things play a role in it. And you don't, when you're young and stuff, you don't really think about that a lot. And so it was important for me to think about that and to really try to nurture and help Oscar in the areas where that could affect him, and try to talk him, you know, talk to him about it, and, you know, let them know that there's consequences for actions if they're unfavorable. And so we really got a chance to talk about that, and to, he made, you know, he, when he was younger, there was no issues, you know, he didn't get into any trouble or anything like that. He waited till after he was 18, he wanted to be an adult. And so oftentimes that life has been panned to be, you know, so much fun, and, you know, to do different things, to be an adult, you want to experience different things. And so that's what he did. And so my job to him was to continue to love him and encourage him. You know what? You are somebody. You can do better. You know, you just have to make it up in your mind to change the direction or your course of life.
So you mentioned Oscar had gone to a Christian school, and then at some point.
Yeah, he went to Leah's Christian school, and then he went to, they changed it. It's called International Christian School. It was Community Christian. So he went to up until the eighth grade, and then I put him in a public school, and that was a mistake. But it was, you know, I put him in a public school, and he kind of got bored in the public school. And
that was what he'd wanted, right?
Uh-huh. He wanted to go to the books. So he kind of got bored, you know, at the school. And he was still, at times, he wouldn't even go to class. But when it was test time, he would take the test, and he would still pass the test. And I remember a time when he got a B in a class. And so I went up to the school to talk to the principal and the teachers to find out why they gave him a B. Because he hadn't been there. I knew he was cutting class. And so she says,
well. Oh, so you weren't saying my son deserves an A. You're saying, why are you giving him a B?
Why are you giving him a B when he shouldn't get a B? He should have got an F. And so the teacher pulled out his grades from his test. She says, I know he don't come sometime, but here's his grades from his test. He knows how to ace the test. He gets A's and B's on them. And so I said, he still doesn't deserve the B that you gave him. I said, because he should report to class. And then it would be fair to give him a B. But she was kind of like, well, he made the test. I gave him the grades that he got. And he got A's on the test and B's on the test. And it averaged out to a B. And so that's what she gave him. But no, my thing for Oscar was to graduate and go to college. But we all, I think as parents, we all have a list of things we expect our children to do, okay? And sometimes for some of us, when they begin to not do what's on the list, we get hurt about it. And, you know, some parents don't want to be bothered with the child after, you know, they don't follow the list that we have set for them. But one of the things that I learned is that Oscar had his own identity, and he had his own course of life. And we all have our own course of life. And so through that, we have to allow our children to grow and to experience things, even though we want to protect them from those things. We have to allow them to experience things and continue to encourage them and pray for them and be there to support them when they need that support, to show them that, yes, you are experiencing this, but you can turn around and you can, you know, do differently. And so I just know that Oscar was on that way to just changing his life, maturing, because he was immature at that age. He was maturing into the man, and he didn't have the opportunity to fully evolve into the man that he was going to be.
As I've been interviewing a lot of African-American men exactly the same age as him, especially post the showing of Fruitvale Station in Oakland, a lot of people were sort of awestruck, like, what should we do now? This is a really hard thing, and this is our reality. I spoke with Anthony Jones, who feels like Oscar really saved his life by telling him not to go out that night.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he talked about is that the police are very quick to shoot at black men. And he compared it and said, you know, if you see them if there's a white man who's crazy with a gun, they're going to say, put the gun down, calm down.
And it's so true what Anthony said, is that it is the police scene has been such a profiling of African-American young men and brown men that is no opportunity to talk down, to find out what's going on with them. But instead, oftentimes, they shoot and then want to make a determination. And then the first thing they want to do is try to demonize the person. Instead of saying, you know what, I made a mistake, okay? And accepting the reprimand that they might get from their job. They want to revert the blame and blame the person who they murdered, right, instead of accepting, hey, I did this, you know, and accepting the consequences. And so the African-American young men, you know, today their fashion, the way they wear their clothes, you hear people, police say, well, I thought he was reaching for a gun. But if you really look and you educate yourself, if you go into the neighborhoods and you learn the people, you'll see, wow, half of them have their pants sagging, but they really do have a belt on, but they're pulling up their pants constantly because their pants are falling down as they're walking. And so one of the things that's, you know, important to me is that, you know, police officers not just come from wherever they live out of the a county or out of the city that they're policing, but that they stay in that city for a while to learn and get to really learn the communities that they work in and how the people in those communities go day to day, have their day to day lives. And oftentimes they don't. They come from a community and they see these things and then they react and say, well, I thought he was going, not really thinking about, hey, that's the trend. They're wearing their pants like that. They may not necessarily be going for a gun. Just like when my son was murdered. First thing that Meserly said, oh, I thought he was going for a gun. No, you didn't think that. But that was the first storyline that they gave, that he gave. And so then it had to be changed because he didn't have a gun. So then he was resisting arrest. And so, you know, that was the next story. And it's sad because had he said, oh, I made a mistake. I didn't mean to do that. You know, it took him to get two different attorneys before he even really ever said anything to that effect. And he didn't even say it to that effect then. He said, well, I thought he was going for a gun. He was resisting arrest. And then the next thing he said, well, I mistake my taser for my gun. But Oscar had already took a couple pictures of him with his taser pointing at him. And so it's a sad situation because the policing needs to be educated more and racial profiling needs to cease. It really does.
You're listening to the Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org. I'm Sharon Sabota. Today we're in conversation with Wanda Johnson, the mother of Oscar Grant. Oscar was killed in the early hours of New Year's Day on 2009 by BART police officer Johannes Meserly. If 5 years later you could speak with Johannes Meserly, would you do so? And what would you say to him if you could have a one-on-one conversation?
I would say to him that he is able to pick up his child every day. During the time that he murdered my son, his girlfriend was delivering, or she was about to have her baby that same time. Okay, maybe they shouldn't even had him at work during that time. But he knew the difference between a gun and a taser, and I would tell him that. And you never apologize to me personally. You sent a note to the jury so that they could have sympathy for you because you were on trial. And if it was an accident, you would have said it from the very beginning. But I forgive you for that, but God is the one that needs to forgive you, or you need to get your forgiveness from God, because he's the only one who has the final say in his life.
And how would you have felt differently if in the beginning he said, I screwed up, I made a mistake? How would that have affected you differently than the way that he sort of skirted taking any responsibility this entire time?
It would have affected me differently because I would have been able to really kind of sympathize and believe that. Okay. But because he never did that, we know it was on purpose. Once he said he thought he was going for a gun, you wouldn't pull out your taser. If somebody's going lethal, you're going to go lethal. And that's exactly what he thought. So it would have been different if he would have said that, and I would have told him, you know, if you thought Oscar was going for a gun, you wouldn't have pulled your taser. And you have to be truthful to yourself, because every night you have to go to sleep. And Oscar's blood is on your hands because you murdered him.
And you said something that would maybe surprise many people as you were talking about things you would say to Johannes Meserly. You said, I forgive you. Can you talk about what that was like, to be able to get to the place where you can feel and say that you can forgive him?
Once Oscar was murdered, anger came up. Yeah. A lot of anger. And I had to really do a lot of praying. And through studying the Word of God and through prayer, the Lord would have me to forgive him. The Lord would have me to pray for him. because the Lord wants him to save him. And I had to be able to forgive him to be able to talk to you, because the message is that we have to love each other in spite of our color, our different skin colors. We have to learn how to be able to dialogue with one another and not just make an assumption about someone because they look different than we do, but we have to learn how to love them in spite of those differences that we have with one another. And so that's how I was able to, you know, be able to forgive him and to be able to pray for him. Because, you know, we've always been raised in our family that colorblind, you know. We have mixed nationalities in our family. And so there's no prejudice in here. If you're Caucasian, we love you. You know, if you're Hispanic, we love you. I mean, we have all that in our family. And so for Johannes Messerli to see Oscar and make a judgment call, I think it was racial profiling. It was because he was black, because had it not been because he was black, the other person who they said Oscar got in an altercation with, they never even went to see if that person was hurt or anything. They just let him go on free. They didn't even talk to him. And so because of that, it showed that they were prefacing the African-American young men and the group of Mexicans that was there rather than trying to figure out what had happened.
As I was driving here today, I was listening to Hard Knock Radio with Davey D, who was talking about the Andy Lopez case. The deputy who shot the 13-year-old mm-hmm. has been released, going back to work on death duty. Then there was the George Zimmerman case over the summer. George was acquitted. We know Johannes Messerli was only sentenced to 2 years and didn't serve all of that time. These men aren't being held accountable at all. So instead of getting better, right now it feels like we're going the opposite direction. How are you feeling as you're seeing these cases sort of unravel?
I feel disappointed in the judicial system, but I also know from sitting in the courtroom that there is a real imbalance of the judicial system for African American and brown young men. This system has to be revamped for all to be able to be created equal in the judicial system, because right now, the judicial system, and this is my opinion, is nothing but a slave trade system where you have a lot of African-American young men, a lot of brown young men in there, and they're working on different manufacturing things to send out to the public, and they're really not getting paid hardly anything. And so it's just, to me, another way of slavery. And we really have to look at our judicial systems, because it's a revolving door. It's no reform, as we had once said the judicial system was going to be a place where people can go and get reformed and come out. But as you know, oftentimes the person gets out, goes back in, gets out, goes back in, and it's just a revolving door. And so I think about George Zimmerman's case. Trayvon's mom and myself, we spent some time together. We was on a show together, and we've talked. And it's a shame that the lives of our children was not valued. And that's what's happening with Andy Lopez and so many others who's been murdered by the police system. The lives of these African-American and brown young men, Oscars, has not been valued. It's not valued. We don't place enough on it. You look at Michael Vick spent more time in jail for dog marling, and Messerli gets 11 months, I'm sorry, in county jail, never went to prison. And had he been an African-American man, we know he would have went to prison. If Oscar would have did that to him, Oscar would have got 25 to life, or he would have been sitting in jail, whether he was a police officer or a civilian. And so we have to look at changing that.
And I hadn't thought about framing it this way, but Oscar had been in prison himself before for things minor, right? Related to drugs and such?
Correct. I will say that Johannes Meserle, he served 11 months in the county jail, and Oscar went to prison for a violation. And so his crime, in a sense, if you look at how the system worked, was more severe than Meserle's crime, and Meserle killed my son. And so that tells you that the judicial system doesn't value the life of an African-American young man or a brown young man. And the way that they have the system set up for the African-American young men and brown men is failure. Is hopefully that they would fail, is what I believe the system wants.
So you had to navigate the criminal justice system because at some point Oscar ends up first maybe going to jail, and then how does it work?
Yeah,
so we can kind of contextualize it and compare it to Meserle.
Okay. Oscar went to jail, to Santa Rita, and he violated the terms of his probation. He ended up doing, I think, like a 30-day sweep in prison. But even though he did 30 days compared to a person doing 30 years, is still prison, is how we look at it in our system, okay? And so we give him a felony for that, okay, for possession of drugs. Then you get 5 years felony probation. Johannes Meserle murdered Oscar. He got 11 months in county jail. And he got what you call an irrevocable parole, meaning that he's really not on parole. He, at that time, couldn't carry a weapon. I believe he can carry one now. Basically, he really wasn't on parole, even though they said it's irrevocable. Okay. He doesn't have to report to a parole officer. He doesn't have to worry about his parole being violated to go back. So the system really works to, in my opinion, to keep African-American young men and brown young men going back to the jails and prison. Because if they have a friend who's on probation and they're not on probation, or they're on probation as well and they're with that friend, they get violated as well and they go to jail along with that friend. And so I just think a lot of reforms need to be made and changed in our judicial system.
And then he got the felony marking title kind of tattooed on him, right? And that doesn't go away, and it makes it very difficult to find a job.
To find a job? To vote? You even though you're still a citizen of the United States, you almost lose your citizen rights because you don't get that opportunity to vote. But there is a clause where you can vote after you get off of the felony probation. You can go try to get back reinstated to vote. They don't like to give you student loans, okay? It's hard to find housing. So there's all these system given things that is hard for them to be able to get to continue on in this life. You try to get a job, people look at that, no, you got a felony, nope, we don't want to hire you. You try to apply for student loan, they don't have to give it to you because you have a felony. So there's a lot of strikes against that person, and it's hard to recover for a lot of people because it's, what am I going to do? I might as well do whatever it is I was doing before because I have a better chance at survival, or I have a better chance at whatever it is than trying to go to all these different systems and you continually reject me and turn me away.
And the cycle continues because there's no alternative, right?
Exactly. The cycle continues.
And what kind of rehabilitation did they offer Oscar as he was transitioning out in terms of how to be a good father, member of society, good mentor?
I don't think really that was offered. Oscar got his encouragement and his mentoring from his family and a few friends that I had.
But basically, though, you're let out of prison with nothing to help you, and then everybody has their door shut to you.
And that's exactly, you know, really what it was. And so we really, I thank the Lord. I've been fortunate to meet a lot of different people, and my daughter has been fortunate to meet a lot of different people. And so we've had some of her her managers, where she manages with, and their managers, they've, you know, given Oscar an opportunity and have allowed him to work there. And, you know, and so it's, you know, really been, it has really worked. It really was really working out for him.
We continue to tackle the issues of profiling, stop and frisk policies. And like your nephew was telling me, police who are quick to shoot at specifically at African-American young men. The bottom line is that every issue does seem to be interconnected. And I think we've really affirmed here that it does take a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. How do you think we can do a better job as a society of supporting women who are raising these young men who are at risk, I guess we could say, for lack of a better
term? I think we need the men of God to step up and to grab these young men and begin to nurture them. Oftentimes, young men act out for a lack of love or wanting to fit in or boredom. And so if we say we believe in God, then we are our brother's keeper. And it's our job not to just have meetings in church or not to just try to nurture just our own sons, but to try to nurture whoever we come in contact with. And oftentimes we don't really have that nurturing or that fellowship or that contact with a lot of the African-American young men or even some of the brown young men, is because we ourselves are scared. And so we really have to come to a place in our lives where we trust what the Bible says and trust what God says and begin to say the behavior is not acceptable. You know, we're not going to let you continue to act the way that you're acting, and we're going to help you in and develop you in the areas where you need developing in. Because a lot of times, if you look at our society, we at one time, a lot of young men played basketballs, and African-American young men played basketballs, and there was basketball courts available to them to play. And if you really look around today, a lot of that has been taken away, especially I know for Hayward. A lot of that has been taken away, and I think we have to offer the young adults and the youth something to do. There used to be summer jobs available where we would offer that. So that would occupy some of the time. I remember my brother and them working summer jobs. I worked summer jobs. So that would occupy some of our times. And nowadays, even though they is so far, so limited and few now, that there's really nothing for a lot of young males to do. Sometimes you can't even go to summer school if you're not failing a class. Summer school used to be for everyone at one time. Now it isn't. And so because our society is changing and deciding, you know, you don't need this, add this, take this out, we're not really improving. We are actually becoming worse than what we were years ago. And our crime rate, you know, is really shooting up because of that, I want to say. You know, we need to offer programs. You know, we need to offer training. We need to offer, you know, classes on how to deal with your anger, even more so in the urban communities, you know, in the communities where people don't want to go into. We need to offer those things so that all of us can have a fair chance at life.
If you had to think about the most trying aspect and the most rewarding aspect of being a mother, what would that be?
Sometimes trying to raise children as a single parent, and you are so responsible for everything. Oftentimes, some mothers don't get child support, so I didn't get any child support. So it was hard at times, you know. I was trying at times to juggle the bills, you know, work, try to discipline some time over the phone, watching my children grow up. One of the trying moments was when Oscar went to jail. That was a very hurtful moment. Because again, I had a list of Oscar was going to graduate from high school. Oscar was going to go to college. Oscar was going to become a manager at the job that he was working at. Oscar was going to go into ministry with me. So I had the whole list of things for him. I think I was harder on him than I was my daughter. Because she was a lot easygoing. She was more mellow. She was, you know, he had the personality of a young man as he got older. And so some of that was disappointing to me. But as I continued to see both of them growing up and working together, and then I worked with both of them before. So, you know, it was fun. It was, those were enjoyable moments of my life, you know, being able to spend that time with them, you know, and to really watch their personalities and, you know, see them at work and, you know, see them maturing into the adults that they were created to be.
And I'm reluctant to end this interview without finding out a little bit more about you.
Okay.
Because I think you have so many different things. You've alluded to ministry. You also have another job. Who is Wanda Johnson?
Well, who am I? You want me to pull out my bio? Huh?
Yes.
Let's see.
And I see you're very humble. So take away the humility. Give us a glimpse.
Let's see. Went to Chabot, I think, for like 10 years trying to work on an AA degree. It was so funny. I'd take one class at a time. Sometimes my sister was attending Chabot too, and I was working, I think, graveyard at the time. And so I would get into the class, I would put my head on the desk, and I would just fall asleep sometime, and she'd be nudging me to wake up. And I'm trying to do my work in class and at home, and anyway, I obtained an AA degree at Chabot years ago, and I obtained a Bachelor's of Arts in Business Management and a Master's in Human Resource Management. Planning on going back to school again pretty soon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get a doctorate in theology. I actually am a minister at the church. One of the associate ministers at the church that I go to, which is Palmacy and Hayward. And I just, I still work a full-time job and still do ministry. So I'm busy doing a lot of different things. But it's fulfilling. It's fulfilling. I always tell people, I'm gonna really one day go into the profession that I was called to go into. And that's teaching, being a teacher. But in a sense, I'm teaching as I go anyway. So I'm working on the calling that God has called me to.
So if you could have done anything, you might have been a teacher?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You would have taught whom?
I would have taught probably sixth grade or 12th grade. And I still may go back one day and do it. I'm just I'm going to go back to school, though, to work on a theology degree. And so I might, in the process of that, take a test to just try to see if I could get in and teach, you know, either at the junior college or at a high school.
As you've talked about, you've had to go through a huge journey of healing, of going through pain, suffering at times. And we're coming up on the 5-year anniversary, so this is kind of a pivotal time. So if you had to think about the most important lesson that you've gained from going through this difficult life experience, what do you think that would be?
The most important lesson is to educate, to talk about it, to not wait until something happens, but to act out now. Oftentimes, we have been called to do things, and we really don't step out and do them. And I know that since Oscar was murdered, that I really, at first, didn't want to really step out and talk about it a lot. And so my brother Cephas would talk about it a lot, Uncle Bobby. And as I was praying one day, and the Lord began to just remind me, this is what I called you to do, you know. And so being able to educate and talk to people about it, and other people here, if they could just take one thing away, that there is redemption, there's always hope as long as you have breath. People make mistakes, but they could change and still become a vital part to our society as we encourage them and nurture them. And so I would say that talking about it, you know, is what Oscar would want me to be doing.
And so at first you sort of wanted to shut away, sort of, or be on your own. And then at some point you found your voice. You said maybe with the help of prayer. How did your life shift once you started talking and you used your voice to share your story?
It shifted because several people came up to me after I had talked at one visual. And a young lady came to me and she said, you know what? My life will never be the same again. You told me to fight for what I believe in, to move forward. Don't stop fighting no matter what it looks like. And she's still fighting today for what she believes in. And so, she told me that changed her life. And from that moment, after she had said that to me and someone else had said this, almost the same thing to me, I knew that it was important for me to speak up and begin to say to people, number one, love yourself. You can do anything. You can be anything you desire to be if you work on it. And don't give up on yourself. And those around you who may not be where you want them to be, don't give up on them. Encourage them and help them get to where they need to be in this life. And then that's where your fulfillment will come in at.
And finally, any messages you'd like to leave our listeners with?
The only thing that I'd like to leave your listeners with is, number one, know that there's always an opportunity for redemption. Number two is learn to love people for who they are. Don't make a prejudgment because of the color of their skin or what you may have heard that they've done. But always have a heart to be able to forgive and to be able to help people get to where they need to be in life.
You're tuned into the Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org. I'm Sharon Sabota. Today, we've been in conversation with Wanda Johnson, the mother of Oscar Grant, as she remembers her son on the upcoming 5-year anniversary of his death. Those of you who had the chance to see Fruitvale Station know that there's a scene that takes place in a supermarket during which Oscar's character calls his grandmother to help a customer learn how to prepare fish. I spoke with Oscar's real-life grandmother, Bonnie Johnson, as she remembers her grandson, Oscar. We know that we're approaching a difficult time. Your daughter's about to have a birthday pretty soon, but you also unfortunately have to recognize the 5-year anniversary of the murder of your grandson. What is this like for you?
Just like starting all over again. you know, with the grieving. It never ends anyway, but this renew it. And then, you know, it's quite sad, you know, and we all hate that it happened because he was my number one grandson. He were able to really help me more than the rest on doing different things around the house since his dad is handicapped.
And one thing I've been talking with Wanda a lot about is just helping people get a sense of who Oscar Grant was. So tell us about that. What are some things that he used to do for you and how did he help you?
Well, if they visit my home, I could show them how he put strippings around the cabinets and did a lot of cleaning. He would even mow the lawn when he was allergic to grass with a lot of sneezing, you know. But he would tie something around his nose. He had time to help his grandmother. And also with his grandfather, he loved to go fishing. And that was one of the main things that he was only shown once how to bait a hook or do any kind of thing, a work once. And he were able to do it on his own after that one time showing.
And I understand that he really liked your cooking?
Well, sort of, yeah. He would always come and raid the refrigerator.
In the movie Fruitvale Station, which I'm sure you've seen.
Yes.
And there's a scene kind of depicted on, it sounds like a real thing that happened, where Oscar actually calls you and has you explain to a customer how to make fish.
That was the true part of the movie. He did call. This customer wanted to know how to do the fish. So he said, my grandma could tell you. I get her on the phone. So he called me, and I tried to explain to the customer, you know, about how to fry the fish. So hopefully she got it almost right.
So the other thing that Wanda really touched my heart with was when she was talking about that she had to find it in her heart to forgive Johannes Messerly. How has sort of the healing process been for you as the grandma who had this grandson who helped you with everything and was very loving to you? What has it been like to heal from this?
Well, I was the heavyweight because forgiveness is don't have a number. And when something happened, you have to forgive to heal. Otherwise, if you don't forgive, you would always be weeping and this and that. So I were able to talk to Wanda and to keep after her about the forgiveness part, and then your grieving would ease up on you.
What is the most important lesson, life lesson, that you've had to learn from going through this very difficult thing of losing a grandson? Too young, too early.
Well, I really didn't go through a lesson because God doesn't make mistakes. We just have to be able to face the whatever God has for you and go from there. That's the only way I can answer that. It wasn't a thing that was accidental to God, but it was accidental to us. When he was born, he was given that length of time in life. And if you're a truly believer like I am at my age, which is 75, you accept what God do, because he does it for the best.
So I like the way that you said that this was somebody else's plan and you just had to adjust and face it. So I guess then the follow-up question is, how were you able to get through that and face this very difficult thing?
Well, you really first have to accept that it happened. It's no dream. A lot of people think they are dreaming. It's no dream, but to accept what has happened and go from there forward, encouraging and telling people that accept what God do, because you can't do anything about it anyway, and to have a longer life yourself, to just pray to him and ask him to give you the courage to accept it and go from there and live the rest of your life.
And what advice might you offer to somebody else who feels down and out, or they're struggling, or something terrible happened to their loved one and they can't figure out how to go forward? What words of comfort might you offer them?
Well, if they would tell me that they believe in God, do they know how to pray? We could pray for them, but they has to, within their heart, listen to that voice and accept what has happened to them and ask the Lord to bring me through it. There are distractions. There are other things that you could be doing, not just depending on just what you have, sadness. you could help somebody along the street, anything that would take your mind away from the other, because that would one day happen to you. You're going to leave the world. So you do what you can good for people, and you'll be happy.
What advice might you offer to somebody else who feels down and out, or they're struggling, or something terrible happened to their loved one and they can't figure out how to go forward? What words of comfort might you offer them?
Well, if they would tell me that they believe in God, do they know how to pray? We could pray for them, but they has to, within their heart, listen to that voice and accept what has happened to them, and ask the Lord to carry me, bring me through it. There are distractions. There are other things that you could be doing, not just depending on just what you have, sadness. You could help somebody along the street, anything that would take your mind away from the other, because that would one day happen to you. You're going to leave the world. So you do what you can good for people, and you'll be happy.
Anything else you would like to add?
Thank you for the interview, but God is good all the time.
If you've been inspired by Wanda and Bonnie Johnson's stories, or you would like to show your support for the life of Oscar Grant that was taken on January 1st, 2009, please join them at the annual vigil at Fruitvale BART Station on New Year's Day. You can also learn more about the Oscar Grant Foundation by visiting www.oscargrantfoundation.com. That concludes our show for today. Thank you for listening to the Women's Magazine, and thank you to Wanda and Bonnie Johnson, the mother and grandmother of the late Oscar Grant. Please visit our archives at kpfawomensmag.blogspot.com or on kpfa.org. I'm Sharon Sabota. I've been your host and producer for today's show. Have a great day.